Peter B. Collins with news and commentary. I'm back in the saddle here on Leap Day, February 29, 2012. And we begin with an humble apology. I've been away for a few days. There was a website crash. And some of our valued subscribers are unable to use their passwords to get in. And other people are having trouble accessing some of the recently posted in-depth interviews. We're working on it. And I do need to warn you that due to the software problems, we're probably going to have to do another facelift on the website. So brace yourselves for that. We'll update you as soon as we have a plan in place. And sad news broke early this morning. Davy Jones, the leader of the concocted band from about 1970 called the Monkees, has passed away.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
The Monkees were a band that were assembled via casting call for a television show produced by the late Don Kirshner. I met Don a few times. He was a real whack job. But the Monkees were successful both on television and in selling records. Even though they weren't that talented and relied on studio musicians to do most of the heavy lifting for them. Now, this gives me a great opportunity to play one of the most inspired takeoffs on the Monkees theme song that you just heard. And I don't know who did this, but it was sent to me in the depths of the Bush era, and it really sung to me.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, hey, we're Republicans, and people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown?
One more verse, guys.
Lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans, and people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections, run the country into the ground.
And this is a great entree to the fresh novelty song that I have, political novelty song about the Mitster.
You've heard him on TV. You've been embarrassed for him on the campaign trail. Now, bring some of Mitt Romney's most cringeworthy musical hits into your very own mansions with this brand new collection, recorded with co-star and running mate Gordon Gekko, and featuring the mega hit, Switzerland the Beautiful.
Oh, secretive Swiss.
Oh, no, don't sing, Mitt. Please, don't sing.
For massive bank accounts.
I mean, that's why I can't support Roseanne for president. She might sing.
Here's whose real net worth is some insane amount. Oh, Switzerland, oh, Switzerland, we tip our hats and say we hit our dough, they'll never know the taxes we don't pay.
And no, there's more, but I can't stand it. And Mitt Romney squeaked out a very narrow win over Rick Santorum in the Michigan Republican presidential primary. My friend Tony Truppiano, who is a progressive talk show host and does a morning show on WDTW in Detroit, helped lead the charge of Democrats for Santorum. Just a little chicanery to pay back Limbaugh's ploy in Ohio in 2008, where he got Republicans to vote for Hillary, trying to stop the black man from getting into the White House. So it's interesting to see that Romney, who is gaffing more often than Joe Biden used to, and what kind of pills they give Joe to keep him quiet, you know, the trees in Michigan are the right height, Ann's got a couple of Cadillacs. I mean, he is just so out of touch, and he's actually acknowledged that he knows he's been screwing up. But the bottom line is that Mitt Romney, if he does get the nomination, is going to be damaged goods. And if Rick Santorum manages to get the nomination, he will be so far to the right, having run as an Opus Dei Catholic here in the primary, that he is presumably unelectable. So it does lead to talk of a deadlock at the convention that could lead to the emergence of Jeb Bush. And I consider that a remote possibility at this point, but it could become more of a possibility as time goes on. After all, the convention's being held in Florida, and Jeb Bush has experience in rigging elections in his home state. So we'll have to watch and see how that plays out. But it's, I guess, a relief to Michiganders to have that primary behind them. My very conservative Democratic senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, with whom I rarely agree, is doing something good, and I'm happy to support her on it. She is pressing forward with her bill called the Due Process Guarantee Act that would clarify the confusing language in the National Defense Authorization Act's Homeland Battlefield bill. That's a mouthful, I know, but that's the draconian legislation that Obama signed and said he wouldn't use back on last December 31st. So Feinstein now has 24 co-sponsors, including Rand Paul, the senator from Kentucky, Mark Kirk, the comatose, actually, senator from Illinois. He had a stroke. I don't know if he's actually still in a coma. She does have pretty broad bipartisan support. And I think, unfortunately, this is much needed. And it doesn't, the language in it so far needs to be beefed up. But at minimum, it eliminates American citizens as possible targets for unlimited detention without charge based on secret evidence. And I want to give a shout out to my friend Shahid Buttar, executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, quoted in an article about this today in my San Francisco Chronicle, my little hometown newspaper. Also in the U.S. Senate, moderate Republican. Is that oxymoronic or just anachronistic? Moderate Republican Olympia Snowe, who was gearing up for, I believe, her third election this year, has said she's had it. Can't stand the partisan bickering. Maybe it's she can't stand to take orders from Mitch McConnell. But she has pulled out very late in the process. And while I don't know the lay of the land in Maine, and I haven't seen, other than a governor, a Democrat elected there statewide in quite a while, it'll be interesting to see if a Democrat can enter that race this late and grab that seat. That would certainly help prevent a run in the Senate that could lead to a President Obama in a second term with very little support on Capitol Hill and not the even 51 votes, much less the 60 votes often needed to do business in the United States Senate. Also in my hometown paper this morning, an encouraging poll. And I'll stick my neck out here and say that because of the flip in California public opinion regarding marriage equality and same-sex marriage in particular, we have seen an actual flip in the polls. 1977, 59% of California registered voters were opposed to same-sex marriage. In a poll conducted last week, 59% of registered voters in California approve of same-sex marriage. And if California is the bellwether for the nation that I hope on this issue, then it shows how far out of touch these right-wing nuts posing as presidential candidates really are. And when they pander to the evangelical base, they are committing a kind of political suicide. And we have to make sure that that is the result. Because we've seen that over the last three or four election cycles, Republicans have successfully used gay bashing. And now it's not just abortion, it's contraception. And we need to box these people up and ship them off to a land of their choice, but somewhere so that we can maintain a true separation of church and state in this country and be the secular nation with religious freedom. But that also includes freedom from religion. And Rick Santorum can barf over JFK speeches from 50 years ago all he wants. We can't turn back the clock. We're not going back to the 1950s, to Pleasantville. It doesn't exist. And at some point, reality has to catch up with these Republican nutjobs. Over at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, back in 08, Mitt Romney said he wanted to double Gitmo. Well, lawyers representing the six high-profile detainees, those accused of the 9/11 crimes, are complaining that their clients' living conditions have deteriorated. There's a new commander who took over in the past year, and they say that issues related to food, hygiene, certification of halal, I guess, the equivalent of kosher food for Muslims, and recreation and access to educational and entertainment items have all been curtailed. Now, you may not care. I know a lot of Americans don't. Polls recently showed that even people who call themselves liberal Democrats don't care. But I will keep speaking up because I'm ashamed of what has happened at Guantanamo Bay and the symbol that it represents worldwide of our country. The violence continues to spin out of control in Syria, and there's a gripping story today of 13 members of the so-called Free Syrian Army who died as they ferried a British photographer, a news photographer named Paul Conroy, out of the country and into Lebanon. And he was in the incident in Homs last week where two other reporters were killed, and I believe two additional, in addition to Paul Conroy, were injured. And it appears that they were actually targeted by the Syrian government, who knew where they were and who they are. And we're seeing, you know, more noise about this. Representatives of more than 60 nations have called on Syria's government to halt its attacks on the besieged cities and to declare a ceasefire. And there's a powerful, in-depth article in this week's New Yorker, written by John Lee Anderson, who's a very competent foreign correspondent. And I give him credit for a first-person account of scenes in various places in Syria. He traveled around sometimes with minders, sometimes in defiance of government minders. But not even a hint at a backstory. Not even a hint that the Free Syrian Army might be getting support from Turkey, the United States, or Israel. One thing that is very clear, though, not from Anderson's article, but just from recent news accounts, is that when the American right wing tries to make it look like Al-Qaeda is our enemy in Syria, well, it ain't so. Ayman al-Zawahiri, last week, came out and called for Bashar al-Assad to step down as the dictator of Syria. That puts us on the same side. Isn't that amazing? Also in that part of the world, President Saleh, or former President Saleh, the 30-plus year dictator of Yemen, was on the scene last week to, I guess you call it a swearing in or an investiture, of his replacement, the vice president. Now, I take comfort in the fact that he's no longer on American soil, and I'd like to see it stay that way. It's very uncomfortable that he's back in Yemen. He cannot let go. And his handpicked successor, who makes noises about relaxing the rules there for public participation and encouraging a broader-based government. I don't know if they quite use the word democracy. Well, he doesn't appear to be much different from Saleh, and Saleh's relatives and cronies are still embedded in the government in Yemen. And I don't believe that the United States should take over Yemen, I think we ought to get the hell out of there and stop using drone strikes over that nation. But to the extent we have influence, we ought to get Saleh out of there and set up a real process for public participation. I don't think there will ever be a democracy there, but I think there should be some form of a participatory government. A story buried in the Saturday New York Times. Well, let me be fair. It wasn't buried. It's on the front page. But on Saturday, a lot of people don't read the Times. If it had been a Sunday story, it would have had much more impact. Headline, U.S. agencies see no move by Iran to build a bomb. Can I repeat that? U.S. agencies see no move by Iran to build a bomb. That is the latest National Intelligence Estimate update. It's consistent with preceding ones from 2007 and 2010. And I don't pretend to know what the actual intentions of the Iranians are. I think they want to bluff about having a bomb because it makes them more powerful. It creates some resistance on the part of other nations to mess with Iran, except, of course, Israel. And will somebody please, like James Clapper, our super spook who now runs the national, what the hell is that called? A national intelligence office. Will somebody tell the Israelis what we know? No move by Iran to build a bomb. No need for a preemptive strike with or without American approval. No need to plunge the region and possibly the world into a hot war based on a preemptive strike by Israel. Will cooler heads prevail? I don't know. And one final item today from the Sunday New York Times. Thomas Friedman, a corporate apologist, had a very revealing point of view based on facts. One of the things we hear from the Republicans, particularly as gas prices are rising, and we're at $4.30 a gallon here in California. I was in Chicago for a couple of days, and it's still under $4 a gallon at most stations there. But with gas prices rising, the Republicans are putting more pressure on Obama's energy policy. And because he didn't drill, baby, drill everywhere, they want to create the illusion that who cares about the Gulf of Mexico? We need more offshore drilling everywhere. Who cares about Fukushima? We need to be all of the above, all in, and despite the fact that taxpayers take the greatest risk on building new nuclear power plants, that's what Republicans promote. Well, Friedman writes, and he cites the corporate news source, Bloomberg. The U.S. is the closest it has been in almost 20 years to achieving energy self-sufficiency. Domestic oil output is the highest in 8 years. The U.S. is producing so much natural gas that where the government warned 4 years ago of a critical need to boost imports, it may now approve an export terminal. The U.S. has reversed a two-decade-long decline in energy independence, increasing the proportion of demand met from the domestic sources over the last 6 years to 81% through the first 10 months of 2011. So when they talk about energy independence and freeing us from dependence on Middle Eastern oil, and they like to say Islamic oil, the truth is that we produce 81% of the energy we consume. Only a lot of that energy is already exported. Alaskan oil, that crude never comes to the United States. And so it's a huge myth that the media rarely tries to challenge or penetrate, that we are so deadly dependent on Middle Eastern energy supplies. And it's the basis for the green economy that is often derided by the capitalist pigs on the far right. We are making progress in that direction. Are there millions of green jobs? Well, not quite. But we're making progress, And we really need to focus on climate change. That's much more important than energy independence. But it doesn't test well with focus groups in this election year. And as we wrap up today, we're going to give Roy Rogers and Trigger a rest. Because guitarist Billy Strange passed away a few days ago. And when I was a kid growing up in the 60s, his instrumental versions of popular songs and movie themes were pretty popular around my house. And I don't know whether to blame one of my brothers or my dad. I just don't remember. But Billy Strange was a very talented session guitarist and a great songwriter, too. He'll be missed. Thanks for listening to today's news and comment. Look for another in-depth interview podcast. We'll release that on Friday at peterbcollins.com. And hang in there with the software glitches. I think we're going to get them fixed eventually. I sure hope so.